Blog Talk Radio.
I own it, I did that, not proud that that was me, and when I face it, I take back a little dignity, not looking for excuses, I just want to be free from the power.
Hello and welcome to the Bubble Hour, where real people share real stories of addiction and recovery. I'm Ellie, and tonight we are going to be talking about boundaries. Setting boundaries is an essential skill in life, especially for people in recovery. But maybe we should start with the basics. What is a boundary? Wikipedia defines a boundary as the following: the practice of openly communicating and asserting personal values as a way to preserve and protect against having them compromised or violated. Now, alcoholics and addicts often have dysfunctional boundaries. Either they can be too rigid, which leads to suppressed emotions or distant relationships, or they can be too enmeshed, which deprives us of a sense of personal identity. In the first part of tonight's show, we're going to talk about the root of where and how boundary issues begin and how they develop. And we just wanted to make a note that for the purposes of tonight's show, we're going to be addressing primarily familial boundaries, but of course, boundaries apply across all intimate relationships. Now, if we don't learn how to create and maintain healthy boundaries, interpersonal relationships may continue to be defined by old roles and patterns, which increases the risk of relapse. And especially this time of year, when we're often spending time with family members or we are in social situations that we're not usually in, we can feel triggered to resort to old behavior patterns, things like people-pleasing or shape-shifting or other signs of codependency, which is also why I think one of the primary symptoms of lack of healthy boundaries. And on the second part of tonight's show, we're going to share some tools and tips as well as some of our own experiences with healthy boundaries or sometimes lack thereof. An important aspect of setting healthy boundaries is learning simply how to say no. And another important aspect of setting healthy boundaries is identifying how we are feeling. And this is something that can take practice when we're newly sober. We can't teach other people how to treat us if we can't identify our own thoughts, feelings, and emotions. So tonight, let's talk about what boundaries are, why they are important, and share tips and tools and advice on ways we identify, build, and strengthen them, with an emphasis on how to do this when you're newly sober. And tonight, I am very excited to welcome Daniel Boland from Real You Revolution. Danielle has been on our show before, and we are thrilled to have her back. And Danielle is a nationally recognized recovery coach and interventionist who is in recovery herself for over 2.5 years. Welcome, Danielle. We're so excited to have you back.
Hi, Ellie. Thanks so much for having me. This is a great topic and great time of year to cover it, so I'm excited to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we're excited to have you. And I think it'd be helpful can we just start off tonight by talking a bit about the root of where boundary issues can begin and how they can develop?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing that the name that I'm going to throw out there to people is one of my favorite people when it comes to this topic, and her name is Nikki Myers. She's also a person in recovery and has kind of come up with this concept that let's explain like where codependency is versus boundaries. And what Nikki says is codependency is the disease of lost self. So I'm going to bring this full circle. And what that really means is, you know, when we're children, a healthy child is loved for being exactly who they are. And I'm loved no matter what, and I love me no matter what. At some point, we are like that, believe it or not, if we can remember that long ago. our adaptive child, and we all have one, is the part of us that learned behaviors to manipulate receiving love and avoiding fear. So this is if I get these awards, I'm going to be loved. If I get these grades, or, you know, if I isolate, then I don't have to deal with social situations. And then there goes, you know, where the addiction stuff comes into this is we, a lot of us learned. I mean, I certainly learned that drinking made me, you know, be able to handle situations that normally I would have been terrified in, the whole mm-hmm. liquid courage thing. So,
yeah.
So what happens, because of this dance of wanting to be loved and wanting to avoid fear, we look for identity outside of ourselves. And so, again, Nikki Myers calls codependency the disease of lost self. The good news and the bad news is that she says if you're on the path of recovery, once you get to this codependency, this disease of lost self and addressing it, you, as you're peeling away, we call recovery like peeling away the layers of the onion. Nikki says that once you get to this, you are really at the last layers of the onion. So that's good and bad, because I think it's a good sign, but it's also some of the hardest work. Now, to circle it back to the topic tonight, what she also says is the best two ways to recover from issues with lost self are, number one, to set healthy boundaries, and number two, keep the promises that you make to yourself. So
okay.
we can, yeah, so we can probably all say, all right, I understand this lost self. It makes sense. Like, I'm there. I mean, to some extent, everyone's going to nod their heads and agree. And the key is to bring that self back. If we can start to keep those promises we make and to ourselves and have the healthy boundaries, then we're well on our way to, you know, to recovery.
Ah, I like that concept of keeping the promises we set to ourselves, because that's, you know, it seems it's such the polar opposite of what you described initially, which is, you know, kind of that self-definition by how others view me. I mean, if I'm keeping the promises that you've set for me, that's the opposite of honoring, you know, my own intuition and my own self-needs.
100%. And I think, you know, for me in this path, and people said it would probably happen around this time, it was like, okay, great, like alcohol, drugs, way out of the equation. But I recognized 2+ years into recovery that I was still kind of living the life that I had just started in those years of adaptive child, of kind of who do you want me to be? And you hear so many people in the rooms and friends in recovery say, like, I became a chameleon, like, who you wanted me to be. And this is one of the ways, again, to start to come back from that. I think another thing that we can do that might be fun, Ellie, is to do a very basic, like, 5 questions and see what our listeners think in regards to if any of these are kind of red flag situations for them. Does that sound like a good idea?
That sounds like a great
awesome.
Idea.
So, cool. So these are not specific to the holidays, but I think everyone knows. Like, so one other thing that I would like to say is, as you can imagine, there's boundaries with family members, there's boundaries with friends, and there's boundaries with in our intimate relationships. So what we're talking about for the sake of today is primarily, I think, like family, friends, the intimate relationship stuff. Of course, it overlaps, but that could be one or two shows in and of itself.
Yeah.
And again, I think if people here struggle with that, they will probably, you know, shake their heads. And again, we do it. I know for me, I've really mastered the family piece of this and the friend piece, because I knew my family was a good amount of drinking going on, and there was a lot of emotional enmeshment. And it just became like so matter of fact for me that if I don't get this boundary thing, I will not stay sober. So
right.
I've gotten really good with the family stuff. I have a lot of work to do in the relationship stuff. So, again, you know, just to cover these. So there's a wonderful blog. There's a man, his name's Mark Manson, and probably 2 years ago I had Googled this, or yeah, it had to have been. He wrote the blog in January of 2013. Again, it's Mark Manson, and it's The Guide to Strong Boundaries. And it's just a great article overall, and I'll be kind of citing some things of his kind of throughout the show. But he had some questions and combined. Nikki Myers also has an awesome codependency quiz that she gives people. She does have a book coming out soon, so hopefully that'll be a part of it. But we're just going to do like five of the questions. And I think if people are going to know whether generally they lean more towards yes in these or no. So,
Okay.
So the first question, do you ever feel like people take advantage of you or use your emotions for their own gain? Question two, do you ever feel like you're constantly having to save people close to you and fix their problems all the time? I also call this, you know, take responsibility for other people's feelings. I know I grew up in a family where I didn't realize it. And again, this is the whole family legacy is I don't think my parents realized it, and that was how it was in their family. It's this idea that they need to, you know, I'm responsible for how they feel. If my dad came home from work stressed out, I thought it was my fault. And, you know, I've heard heartbreaking situations where kids will say, maybe if I got an A+ on this test, you know, my mom wouldn't drink. So that's another area where this can come out. Number three, do you find yourself far more invested or attracted to a person than you should be for how long you've known them?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an interesting question, too.
That is an interesting,
isn't it? Number four, do you find it difficult to say no and then feel resentment when you are overwhelmed? And last, do you wait to hear what others think before you share your opinion?
Oh,
and again, those are
just the questions themselves. They make me a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Clearly, we're on to something here. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, I think the best one, and I just guarantee, based on a lot of the listeners, that the one that I think people laugh at a lot, and I know even if it's not me, but friends, family, do you find it difficult to say no and then feel resentment when you're overwhelmed?
Oh, that's such a big one. It really is.
It really
It also applies, I feel like every show we touch on self-care and community. I mean, those just are threads that run so strongly through recovery anyway. We talk a lot about how And perfectionism is another one that's all woven into all of this.
Right.
And this sort of urge I have to say, and I kind of have a little mantra that I use now, too. Like, I will, you know, when I say yes, when I mean no, you know, I guess as I progress into recovery a little bit more, like, it still happens. I definitely still do it. I try to be a little bit more deliberate and thoughtful about when I say yes or no to things it could be something very simple or very basic, but because it's instantaneously the other person's needs come into my head. If I say no, I'm going to disappoint them. I'm going to let them down. I struggle with this with my own children a lot, you know, saying no to activities or doing things because I just want to, you know, I have this idea that a perfect mom or a good mom will do something a certain way. But then I'll feel, and right away I'll feel that twinge of, I have an awareness around it now that I just said yes when I meant no, and I sort of think, you know, so then it's kind of, you know, it's something that takes, it's constant work in progress for me.
I think it is like for us our entire lives, regardless of who we are, I really do.
And also this time of year with anything as simple as an invitation or things that come in from the school. I mean, I think I probably had 5 emails in my inboxes about, you know, can you come chaperone this, or can you cook cookies for this, or can you show, you know, all these different things. And I get that I should do this. And then if I say yes to it all, I'm totally resentful. I'm totally overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And that's the trigger. That's where the trigger lies. But I didn't really piece together how much that was tied to boundary issues, to you know, because I always think of codependency can only kind of, and it does really function within in a more intimate relationship, whether it's family or friends or romantic. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, there is a touch of codependency in everything I'm involved
there
with.
Really
because
is.
If I'm saying yes to baking 16 dozen cookies the night before a big, you know, school dance or something, the only reason I'd say yes to that is because I didn't want to let somebody else down. It's not because that's what I feel like doing.
Right. It is. That's where the word, and you'll hear, and that's why I love Nicky Meyer's definition, because like everyone has some piece of it, and it's kind of like there's a spectrum of it. I think something that happened to me when I had the gift of desperation and recovery, it was like I had tried for 2 years. I had wanted to want it, and I couldn't get there. And when I was finally done, I was willing to do whatever it took. And I really, it was something clicked. It was that listening to what everyone told me. And I had always put myself last. I had completely lost myself. I wanted everyone to like me. And one of the things people said was, do the opposite of what you have always done. And so
yeah.
It was actually such a gift of recovery that in that first year, and I know we had done a show, and I refer a lot of clients back to that. It was in November, I think, of 2013. And it was on how to survive the holidays in early recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of drinking that goes on in my family. And, you know, I was at a football game site, and it's fine, but everybody basically besides me and the children had a drink in their hand. So that's okay if that works for them. It doesn't always work for me. So
right.
There goes the, and the other thing with early recovery was that concept of take care of me, and
mm-hmm.
everyone will benefit from that. And I think
right.
it's so easy. I mean, for me, I just remember watching, like, Dexter in, like, month 3 and being like, oh, my God, I'm going to be addicted to television. This is horrible. Like, what happened to my brain? But it was so
yeah,
cool to be like a kid again, and I'm going to take care of my needs like the little child in me, and then everyone in my life is going to benefit from this. And what happens, like you said, with all these events around the holidays, we slowly like chip away at that like self-esteem that we built by not upholding our commitments to ourselves and not drawing proper boundaries.
Yes.
And that's
yeah.
where, like, the, you know, the misery starts to come in, and we start to say we're a little, you know, spiritually unfit.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly
yeah.
what we've just done to ourselves.
You know, it's interesting, too. I want to circle back to something that you mentioned earlier, because it really, I sort of extrapolated a little bit from it, but how, you know, we talk about recovery and talk about sobriety, like being sober is about not drinking or doing drugs or, you know, numbing out through some sort of substance. And when, you know, I first got sober, that's what I anticipated. I'm going to learn how to not drink.
Right.
And so when people would talk about things like codependency and boundaries and self-care and all these different things, especially as it pertained to boundaries, I would sort of think, well, what does that have to do with not drinking? You know, I'm going to go to this party and I'm not going to drink, and I'm going to, you know, have
yep.
this, you know, be around these people who make me uncomfortable, but I'm not going to drink it. And it's a part of the journey in this to realize, wow, that the tools that I need to cultivate to get to successfully not drink. And it's more than whether or not I actually consume alcohol. It's how happy and or peaceful and or miserable I am in not consuming it. I mean, I can go to a party and successfully not drink, but I can be miserable for days as a result of
exactly.
it. So how much this conversation, you know, these are the layers that we build between us and picking up, and between us and the desire to numb out or escape from ourselves. I mean, it has everything to do with whether or not I drink or I'm actively fighting off a drink. It's that these are the thing. These are the issues that are the pathway to that desire to escape
yeah.
from myself.
Exactly. Because if you look back, like we talked about, like in the first few minutes of the show, I know for me, I absolutely had the disease of lost self well before my drinking was out of control.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was something that I developed in my teens. And drinking, you know, it's like when we say in the rooms, like, alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. And in my mind, I just believe that the disease is lost self. I really do.
Totally.
And,
yeah,
and yeah. You know, it's like it's so at the core of everything. And so if you're able to manage that piece and, again, improve on it as you can or can't, you know, at your own pace, then you're absolutely going to improve not only your quality of life, but the quality of your children's lives. I mean, I know for a fact, and they may, you know, kill me, but I don't think they'll listen to the show, my parents, I gave them the full Nikki Myers quiz when I came home from a retreat I was on with her and Tommy Rosen last week, and they scored pretty good scores up there, meaning, you know, Nikki says if you score like 8 or more, you probably should look at like this codependency thing. And both my parents scored pretty high. And again, it's not like a uh-oh, like look what you did to me, but it's this awareness in a family cycle where we have the power to break a legacy and we have the power to change the legacy. So your children are not, you know, I always say this too, my parents loved us so much and wanted us to have everything and be everything and do everything. But, like, I don't believe that they had addressed this at the core with themselves. And so ultimately your kids are going to see, you know, what you do. If you didn't make you the priority and, you know, do your actions align with your values. And so what I saw was very different than what I was told for myself. And that's what I grew up with.
Well, and it's, you know, family systems, because we're talking mostly about family tonight. I mean, it's true to, I love how you said, like, it's not about, like, you did this to me or apportioning blame or, you know, trying to figure out, you know, why am I an alcoholic or why am I so screwed up or why do I have unhealthy boundaries or why am I codependent? That's not really what the journey is all about. And family systems, we all play roles and we become very enmeshed just by the nature of how family systems operate. And one of the challenges that I have found is that when, you know, in particular for me, when I got sober and I started exercising healthier boundaries, that messes with the whole family system. Because suddenly I'm not performing my role in this. And, you know, I've heard it spoken about how, you know, you were talking about the children and learning adaptive behaviors and things. I've heard it spoken about becoming people's container, you know, that I became the container for other people's emotions, for my parents, you know, the people that I loved and cared about and as a child was dependent on. You know, when I step away from becoming everybody's container, there's a huge adjustment period to that. And so if we're making plans for, you know, the Christmas holiday and there's all sorts of demands that are placed on me, you know, I'd like you to come here and stay here for 4 days and do this. And I say, no, you know, because I'm exercising self-care. It's not a rejection of them. I'm trying to put into practice not saying yes when I mean no and becoming overwhelmed. But there's a ripple effect to that. You know, I've always been the person who said yes, no matter what. And that's part of the challenge in developing these new tools is being able to, you know, put your own priorities first and set your healthy boundaries and then stick to it. And, you know, grant people their own reaction to your new decision-making process and your new prioritization of self-care. That's very challenging.
It tends to come up a lot
this time of year. That's kind of why the show is so timely.
Exactly. And there's two dynamics to that, too, is the person they're always used to, but then it's like, where are they with that anyways on their own? Because people with non-existent boundaries, they don't just put themselves at risk, but they don't recognize others' abilities to have boundaries. So, you know, this is something that, again, something I didn't say in the beginning, is this is something that we learn. Children don't have boundaries, right, when we're young. Like, this is taught. And most of us aren't really taught this stuff. And, I mean, I went to a therapist starting in my 20s. I really did not understand this stuff until I started the recovery process, like, you know, 4 years ago is when I really started to learn what these were. So there's this idea, too, that if someone is really healthy, they'll respect that. But if they're really
right.
healthy and they're used to you saying yes all the time, yeah, it is. It's going to be a little bit of it because, again, it shifts, like you said, it shifts the dynamics of the relationship.
Yes,
so
it
I think,
does.
An awesome, you know, definition, the healthy personal boundaries are taking responsibility for your own actions and emotions while not taking responsibility for the other, for the actions or emotions of others. I think that's
so clear and concise and straightforward. And
right.
So it's so difficult to put into practice. That's why I do consider all of these things a practice. I mean,
nobody likes to graduate.
Yes, nobody ever graduates from it. And, you know, I have to cultivate sort of a compassion for myself around this a lot.
Yeah.
Because, again, I can be perfectionist-y about this, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a further into recovery that in my own journey that I've gotten. I relapse from healthy boundaries all the time. I mean, I weave in
yeah.
and out of this. And I, you know, now at least I have the gift of an awareness that this is, you know, why am I feeling this way? Why am I uncomfortable? Well, because I'm allowing my boundaries to be violated. It's not that the other people are misbehaving or mistreating me. It's that the power lies within me to maintain these. And so it's just
yeah.
constant tweaks and adjustments and not beating myself up for it if I'm not doing it perfectly, because I can get to the point where I get resentful, but it's
yeah.
there's really no point.
And right, because I do think too is like the more solid you are in your foundation, like any of us, then it's just like, it's that's what I said to someone the other day. The wonderful thing about recovery is like, we can check our side of the street, and I can be recovery from anything. Like, I can say, like, did I do my best in this? Like, am I human? Like, did I, you know, try as best I could? And it's just that awareness. It is having that compassion and that conversation with ourselves, you know, to the point of, yeah, this is the best I could do. And you know, I'm okay with however the other person is, because guess what? Like, they're not the only relationships in my life. Like,
mm-hmm.
I still have all these other people that may have been hurt by me not upholding the boundary.
Yeah. Yep.
So here's
that's cool.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
okay.
No, you go. That's okay.
Nope.
No, go ahead.
Nope. I was going to do this is a good, like, kind of a holiday example, I think, of, like, a great conversation that you might have. This is from the Mark Manson article. So he talks about the issue that comes up with a mom, and she's making her daughters feel bad for not coming to see her. But I mean, this is the exact, you know, this is the types of things that we deal with, right, around the holidays. So
mm-hmm.
the mom says, this is kind of the conversation with them. She says, I get so sad when you and your sister don't come see me. I get very lonely, you know. And the daughter says, why don't you go out more, mom, make some friends. And the mom says, oh, I've tried. Nobody likes an old lady like me. You two are my children. You're supposed to take care of me. And the daughter replies, mm-hmm. we do. And the mom says, no, you don't. I spend so much time alone. You have no idea how hard it can be sometimes. And the daughter says, mom, I love you and will always be here when you need me. But you are still responsible for your own loneliness. Jennifer and I are not the only solution to all of your problems. But it's
wow.
like, how amazing to be able to get to the point where that is so, like, solid in us. But she didn't say anything
yeah.
bad.
Yep. Oh, I mean, that just, it is, yeah, and that making it about, I mean, that whole example just makes me squirm also, because
right?
it's very familiar to me. It's
right,
very,
I know.
And it's not in a, you know, not just within familial relationships either, but that there are so many loving and compassionate ways to express our own boundaries, and to kind, that's why we put in the title of the show, sort of teaching people how to treat us. And being able to explain with love and compassion, you know, that my exercising this boundary, we don't put it that way, but my saying no to your request or not being available for you every time you need me to is not an expression of lack of love for you.
Right.
That's the ultimate, and that's the end goal.
And I never knew again until I went on down this journey that I thought that being assertive was aggressive. So, like, you know, I was that, and I hear my niece all the time be like, I'm sorry. I'm like, do not say sorry again. Mm. I don't want to hear it out of your mouth. It's like, this is what I want. I'm sorry. Like, apologizing for my truth. And it's not something that we should be apologizing for. So it's like assertive and aggressive are two very different things. Like assertive is just speaking your truth. But like what I thought was like, how dare you like not be courteous and do what other people want of you.
That it's discourteous or aggressive or hurtful. Right.
Right, where the shift comes in.
You know, it's a good segue, too, because the sort of the latter half of this show, we wanted to talk a little bit about identifying and you know, sort of tools and tips of practicing healthy boundaries. And for me, that really starts with tuning into how I feel because, you know, in early sobriety, one of the things that took some time for me to figure out is how am I feeling? I just know that I feel off or wrong. And to be able to sort of dig behind what might be there. And there are definitely some sort of key feelings that are red flags or things that I am finding inevitably lead back to lack of healthy boundaries. And resentment is definitely one of them. If I'm feeling resentful or uncomfortable. And there's actually an article that I found on psychcentral.com that talks a little bit about this, but it gives the advice of during an interaction or a situation, ask myself, you know, what is it about this interaction that is causing me to feel uncomfortable or resentful? And, you know, resentment usually comes from being taken advantage of or not being appreciated. But what I'm discovering is usually a sign that I'm pushing myself beyond my limits because I'm feeling guilty. That just goes back to the example that you read. I want to be a good daughter or a good wife or a good mother. I'm feeling resentful, it has much less to do with the other person's behavior than the way that I'm responding to it. But I can't even get to that point if I don't stop and sort of say, what is this feeling that I'm having?
Right.
And as an active alcoholic or addict, any feeling that I would categorize as bad, I just changed or numbed. You know, I didn't ever have to practice saying, okay, what is this? Where am I feeling this in my body? Is it in my stomach? Is it in my throat? Is it in my shoulders?
Are they getting tense?
You know, like, and sometimes there's even phrases that I'll catch, and one of them is, I'm sorry. If I find myself over-apologizing, I'm never actually sorry. What I'm saying is I'm trying to make you not mad at me while I exercise this boundary. So I look really hard for just general discomfort. Like, what is it? What am I feeling? Resentment. The other one is guilt and self-doubt. You know, I listen to the inner voices in my head. Like, what's the tape in my head saying to me today? What is it playing today? Am I spending a lot of time feeling really fearful about other people's responses? Am I feeling guilty by speaking up or saying no to a family member in particular? You know, we touched upon how, like, we feel like to be a good daughter/wife/friend/mother is all about saying yes. But sometimes I'll find myself, if I'm saying yes, when I really mean no, I'll get the same feeling of discomfort. I mean, I can get the discomfort putting the boundary
up.
And I can get the discomfort not putting the boundary up. So it really all starts with tuning into how we feel. And in early recovery in particular, that can be very challenging because all feelings feel pretty pointy and loud and confusing.
Right.
And so, you know, sometimes writing them down or talking to other people about, you know, I used to call friends of mine in recovery and just be like, I'm having feelings. Like, I don't even know specifically what they are, but I've got them, and I don't like them, and they're making me really uncomfortable.
Right.
And being able to ping off other people and sort of drill down, like, well, what happened to create those feelings? And where, You know, is it guilt? Is it resentment? Is it anger? Is it a combination of all of those things? And from after identifying the feeling, it becomes a little bit more straightforward to sort of name my limits. You know, if I can identify where it is physically or emotionally or sometimes even spiritually where I'm not feeling attuned to myself,
yep.
I can kind of peel away and say, like, am I trying to, you know, what can I tolerate and accept and what can't I? What's making me feel stressed and what, you know, where are the changes that I can be made,
yeah.
to help me feel better about this?
I don't think, again, it's like the first part of that is like you can't set good boundaries if you're unsure of where you stand. And that is where, like, who are you? What do you stand for as a person? Do your actions align with your values and current priorities? And if
yep.
we don't know that, you know, something that was so good, just a small little trick that someone might want to do around the holidays, like, and I need to do another one, but I did this in October with one of my mentors, or November, and it's just like, why do I not do this more? And I wrote a list, 1 to 7, of my values, well, my current priorities at that time. So you could do it, say, okay, for the holiday season, here are my values. Or my priorities. And number one for somebody could be sobriety, right? Number two, I mean, whatever. Family, it doesn't matter. But the point is, like, are your yeses and your nos aligned with that list? And,
yes.
you know, are
yeah.
the number ones and twos, you better be saying no to anything unless it's, you know, you've done the ones, twos, and threes on that list that day.
Yeah.
So
right.
it's just a really good, it was a helpful way for me, something that I always put last. I have this kind of thing where, you know, physical fitness, it's almost because of family history, it's like selfish. And, you know, but on my list, it was like number 4. So the 6s and 7s I was saying no to if I didn't get to my fitness in the day. And like, so I,
yeah.
by having, it was almost like an equation to tell me, you know, okay, like, are we on check today? Like, are we aligned with our values and priorities? It was very, very
Absolutely.
Helpful.
And it can be very, very basic. You know, if I don't have time to take a 20-minute walk or do a 20-minute meditation, I mean,
right.
whatever those things are that are on your list, I mean, you can have a general bucket of self-care. But specifically,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean for you right now? And it can change. And self-care
right.
for me in the holidays has everything to do with not over-promising. Because if I overpromise,
yep.
I'm going to underdeliver, and then I'm going to be resentful. And so, you know, I have to make. I'll say something to myself like, I need to be able to make sure I get a walk in every single day. That I have time for me to go to 3 recovery meetings a week. That I have, you know, that I have
right.
very specific task oriented things. And I'm, like you said, I will not say yes to something if it's going to knock one of those three things off the list.
Exactly.
And
so the best way. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ellen.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So the best way to attack that is, so let's just say, like, my list for November was, number 1 was spirituality, number 2 was self-love and confidence, and number 3 was work. So those were my 3, right? And then under each one for spirituality, it would be like, so what counts as, like, tackling that for the day? So I would write,
yep.
you know, a breakout. And the self-love, what counts as tackling that? And number 3, you know, what counts is tackling work. So that, like I said, it gives you a really, like, cut and dry path to, okay, am I doing the things that I say are most important to me, or am I saying yes because I feel guilty?
Exactly.
Yeah. And something we've also talked about, like, we both, like, love the saying is, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Right.
And I think that is so important. It's like one of those things, like, I can't remind myself that enough. If it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. And
yeah.
The other one is learning to say no without having to explain yourself. That's like a huge Al-Anon thing. You know, it's that... No, if it's a no for you, it doesn't have to be explained to someone why it's a no.
And I think a big piece of that, too, is that oftentimes a no, I want the no without any consequence. You know, I want to be able to say no and have
point.
You love me just as much as you did before I said
right.
no. And sometimes
right.
I'll try to achieve that really passive-aggressively, but like, no, and I'm sorry. When I'm not really sorry,
yep.
it's just
right.
no.
Be honest.
Or no,
right. be
or
truthful.
No because I have to do X, Y, and Z. Or I even find myself, you know, fibbing or telling white lies about it. Like, no, because I have this and this and this. It's just no. It's not, I don't, I'm not, I'm trying to make you
right.
still like me when I say no. And that's something that is definitely a work in progress for me because I can say no and then I can just honor the other person's reaction. They can have whatever reaction they choose.
Exactly. Not
to the fact
control.
That I said no. And it can still make me really uncomfortable. I can still feel guilty. I can still feel uncomfortable or squirmy or, you know, have self-doubt or even a little bit of resentment. But the no holds. Like, I'll stick to the no, and then I'll work with on the feelings that come as a result of that with people who are safe for me. Like, I said no to so-and-so about this, and she's really disappointed and really angry with me, and that's making me feel this way.
Yeah,
it's
I
not
love
making
that.
Me change,
yep.
It's not taking, making me change my no to a yes.
Right,
you
right.
know, saying no, and then I've got to sit with these feelings. Like, oh, I don't like them.
Yeah,
I'd rather just
right.
say yes and not have the feelings. Like, that's
right.
really the, where the practice part comes in for me, that...
It
a
is
boundary
because where's
is...
the self-esteem in that? You
right,
know?
Exactly.
Like, where's the feeling good about integrity to yourself and others?
Exactly. And I, you know, we just, again,
yeah.
it's not like we can take a course and suddenly just say no to everybody and not feel uncomfortable.
Oh,
I feel uncomfortable
God,
all
no.
the time saying no, all the
right.
time. You know, and I do my best to get ahead of it and try to set expectations because I'll look at my list and the things that are important to me and I'll, you know, try to sort of let people know how it, how things are going to go, especially over the holidays. This is what I can and can't do. But, of course, people don't stick to my plans. They have their own. So it's really
right.
it's a practice of honoring the feelings that come up with that. And that's all about practicing self-awareness. You know, that's...
Yeah, and I think a cool one, you know, one of the things that we were talking about is the whole considering your past and present. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean... I will do certain things now when it comes to this, and I will say, I cannot believe, I'll give you an example, Thanksgiving. My family, again, like I said, they're so kind of intertwined. There was no boundaries. I mean, that conversation with the mother, that's like, that it could be my grandmother. And
yeah.
And I know a lot of other people can identify with that in relationships with their family. And this whole, like, we're lonely, why don't you come see us more, like, that whole thing. But my point is, my dad, holidays are so important to my family and everyone being together. And I made the decision this year that I was going to give myself a gift of a retreat and go to Costa Rica for Thanksgiving. And, like, a month before, my dad was like, you're going away for Thanksgiving? And the funnier part is, like, every other year I go to my husband's family. So I was like, Dad, I'm not even with you every Thanksgiving. But it was that, like, how dare you do this to us? And
yeah.
But the point is that I went and I told him he'd be fine. And they picked me up at the airport Sunday night. And it was funny. My mom, or Saturday, my mom's like, what do your in-laws think about you going away during Thanksgiving? And I don't think, she didn't mean it in a bad way, but it's just this, like, expectation that people have because it's just been unspoken. And, you know, one of the cool things about the good, healthy boundaries is don't just recognize that others are not mind readers. Like,
right.
recognize that, like, you need on the other end to speak your truth. Like, people don't know what you're assuming from them or expecting.
Very true. Very true. It was an old behavior pattern, and it still comes up, but old behavior to not speak my needs and then resent people for not recognizing what they are.
Right. And it's so common.
Yeah.
It's so common.
The other thing that
really
I've discovered is kind of, it's kind of cool, is that, you know, I've been able to say no and do things. I mean, I've done some new holiday traditions over Thanksgiving, the same with I took my kids away. And we did our own thing because things are kind of different in our life now. And I just wanted, that was part of my priorities for the month, is just to really have good quality time, just the three of us, post my divorce. And, you know, and that there's some of that coming up over the Christmas holiday also, where we're going to peel off and be a family unit of three because that's a priority of mine.
Yeah,
and
I
you
love
know, that's,
it. It makes me so happy.
And there's
here,
definitely some reactions to that, and people. Other people aren't me either, and they can have reactions and then move on and be okay. You know, that I'm not,
yeah.
That people might say, oh, you know, I don't like that, or how dare you, or, you know, I can't believe you're going to do this. And then the event goes and comes and goes, and afterwards they're sort of like, well, how was it? Did you have a nice time? And how did it, you know, people, they're okay. If they're,
right, they've survived.
You know, I'm not as, I am not responsible for everybody's emotions, and if I make a different decision and stick to my boundaries, you know, guess what? The world keeps turning, and everybody kind of recovers from it. And if they don't, I mean, if it becomes something that's a long-standing resentment or a long-standing obstacle, then that's a relationship I need to examine. I mean, that's, there's, I think sometimes the really enmeshed codependent relationships don't recover from somebody exhibiting healthier boundaries, and there might be some differences
right.
needed there, or some work or some counseling or some things to be done around that.
And that
but,
can be hard. That's hard. And,
yeah.
you know, that was like that whole when you're growing and changing and people in your life are staying the same. And I know for me with my family, there was a lot of fear around, like, are they still going to love me? Am I still going to love them? And I think that I can speak personally, like, I can identify now the big differences. And, yeah, there are certain things that keep coming up and coming up, patterns that I, you know, again, I only have control of my part. But, like,
mm-hmm.
if I'm speaking my truth at all
yeah.
times, most all times to my family now. And it's, like, so it's that idea that I'm 50% of the relationship. So it's that, like,
right.
what part of the relationship can I control? And then just having that kind of grace to be able to, over time, like, let go to the
yeah.
the fact that we can't control their reactions. And like you said about all of this, I mean, that's constant practice. It was funny when I was with them last week and I said something to Nikki Myers. I mean, she's one of those people, like, you try to, you know, not put people in on a pedestal. But I, you know, everything she speaks about in this work resonates so much with me. And I said to them, like, well, so you're like, and I had to catch myself. I almost said, like, you're cured from, like, codependency. And I'm like, what are you saying? Like, no, she's not. Like, she's, this is, again, it's, no, she just does more seemable things for herself. She practices better boundaries and she, you know, keeps her word to herself. And so day after day,
yeah.
like, yeah, she's gotten stronger with it. But it's like there isn't, like, this isn't something you just, like, you know, are, I mean, this stuff was so ingrained in most of us, like, some of us, like, before we could even walk, you know, a good amount
yeah.
of it.
Oh, and people do adapt and they do adjust, too. I mean, I think that's the other thing that I'm discovering that's, I mean, we're talking about Nikki Myers and her practice of it.
Yeah.
And you know, this whole concept of teaching people how to treat me was something that was introduced to me when I first got sober years ago. And
mm-hmm.
being able to say, it's a lot of it too is sort of a language adjustment you hear about keeping things in the I, using I sentences and stuff. And it's, you know, that was very useful to me because instead of saying, you need to stop making me feel guilty or you need to stop pressuring me, like, I need to do this or I feel this way. I mean, just being able to, if I'm talking about myself and my needs and my truth, it's automatically, you know, not something that's threatening or aggressive, or it's automatically honoring something that's it's really more assertive. That's just a way for me to check that assertive versus aggressive boundary.
A great point. You know, there one of my favorite books on this that I recommend to a lot of people is, and I can't think of the author's name, but Nonviolent Communication. But if
mm-hmm.
this is a new way of talking and being for people, and they are used to that kind of aggressive, I this, and, you know, that book is so wonderful because it's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, when you do this, I feel this. Like, can
right.
we try this? So it's just, again, it's like you, like you said, you're taking responsibility, and it's just you're able to, like, talk things out so much better instead of the other person coming back in a defensive stance where then they feel like they have to go on the attack.
It's really, I mean, it's life-changing kind of communication. And I've discovered that the people that I'm closest to, I actually had a family member come back and said, the last time this happened, I think what it was is I had said, I said, this conversation is making me feel very uncomfortable. I think I just need some distance. And
stuff makes,
you know, months later, they came back and they said, the last time we talked about this, it made you very uncomfortable. That's what they remembered, that it made me uncomfortable, instead of me telling them, you know,
I love
running
it.
Them up one side and down the other. And I remember thinking, wow, that stuff works. You know, that they,
oh my God.
Because ultimately they love me and they don't want to make me uncomfortable. It's just such a new practice for me, instead of trying to, you know, contort myself to make them love me, just to say, I'm feeling uncomfortable. It's kind of like saying no.
Yep.
It's a complete sentence.
I
think just for the last few minutes of the show, I think it'd be helpful to, let's just sort of pull it back down to also, because there's a lot of people who listen to the show who are new to recovery. And so, you know, this can get very nuanced and very complex, but in the context of maybe facing your first holiday sober, or dealing with strained relationships. I mean, most of us have some strained relationships when we first get sober. And I don't think that it doesn't really even matter what the circumstances were. I mean, you could have a low bottom with everybody's mad at you, and or you can have a high bottom and people just are uncomfortable with the fact that you're coming into yourself and, maybe are not wanting to expose yourself to alcohol if your family all drinks or your friends all drink, and you're sort of standing on the cusp of the next few weeks and trying to figure out tools that you can use. And this harkens back, I think, to the show that we recently did on tools and tips for the holidays. But one of the greatest gifts of recovery, I think, is getting our slowly getting our intuition back. And if the prospect of a situation or an interaction with a person or an event is making you feel uncomfortable, all you have to do is honor it. You know, you don't have to do all this work on codependency and boundary making.
Right.
I mean, that will all come. But one of the best pieces of advice that I got, if you're not sure and you stand down, you'll be safe. You know, when in doubt, stand down and, you know, take care of yourself. And let everybody else take care of themselves. Just get through it.
If I could just add to that, to those. So I would say my biggest things for the holidays are, number one is, we say it over and over, but planning. Like, we already know the things that are probably going to set us off. We know the family members, that there's risk, and we know, you know, so it's just like being aware of that and being prepared. And if you are caught off guard by people, something else I always say, like, whether you don't know whether to say yes or no, are you doing it out of love or fear? It's usually a pretty quick answer for me. If I'm doing it out of
fear.
Yes.
I like that.
That's been for me, like, just a quick tool, like, damn, love or fear. What are we doing this for? And if it's out of fear, it's for the wrong reason. And
especially at this early recovery, it doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. It's making me feel afraid.
Exactly.
You can figure out what's behind all
simple.
Of that. In all good time, it will all come.
Exactly. That's simple. That's it. And the last one
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you finish your list.
It's the hardest thing with the radio shows. Again, simple tool is, like, in early recovery, I give people permission to revert back to their inner child. Like, who is the little girl in there? Who is the little boy?
Mm-hmm.
If I was at a family party yesterday with my grandmother and everyone in there was drinking, and you know what? I just was feeling a little bit off. And I went outside and played with the kids. Like, I went and played football. And, you know, my sister went back in and was like, I don't want to be antisocial. And the old me would have said, oh, I don't want to be antisocial either. You know, like, again, worrying about, like, but for me at that time, it was like, nope. Like, I'm at the event. I made an appearance. The room smells like booze. Like, it's not putting me, again, not that I needed to drink, but that I wasn't going to be in a spiritually good place. And, like, no, I'm going outside and I'm going to play with the kids. And so, I mean, be prepared. And we say this over and over. bring your own car to stuff. If you need to hop in the car and leave, you can apologize to people and figure that mess out later. That's another big simple thing. Like on
yep.
the actual holidays, when the stuff's going on, like be okay not going and telling people to like respect that you're going through a lot of change. Like number one, be okay with not going. Number two, be okay with leaving when you need to leave. Like those are like no questions asked. Like in my mind, in the first year of recovery, like not up for debate.
Yep. Remove yourself and
mm-hmm.
definitely deal with whatever reactions people have to it later. I think also for people who, I mean, there's so many traditions that we have around the holidays, and I was just talking to a bunch of women that are new in sobriety recently, and all of them are they're the hosters of the Thanksgiving meal, the holiday meal, and they were all, I love what you said about love or fear,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about how afraid they were to host the holidays this year. And, you know, I sort of said, well, it's December 4th. You have 3 weeks, don't do it. Change it.
We host every year Christmas Eve, my husband's family and my family. So not only was it disappointing one family, like it was disappointing two. So, and like
two,
breaking that family
yeah.
up. In year one, we did not do it. And guess what? Everyone survived the next year when we had Christmas Eve again. Like,
yeah.
I have to take a deep breath and, like, there's no, like, we have to get well. Like, we cannot have a substance be part of our lives or there is no life. So it's
right.
like that, to me, that stuff becomes so matter of fact. It's 1 year, people will survive. It's not life or death.
It's absolutely not, and it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be hard. It's
mm-hmm.
going to produce all kinds of uncomfortable feelings, and that again segues into the community, finding some people that you can talk to about why it's uncomfortable and why you're exercising a boundary, and you know get some people in your life that you can talk to about this who can help you. Process those feelings because it's, you know, keeping yourself safe and exercising self-care it messes with the family system. And so you can find some new family that, you know, some friends or trusted people
exactly.
in recovery that you can talk to about those things. And go ahead.
No, and the last thing that I would say, this is my last thing, is that every time I made those new plans and said no when I needed to or left an event, like it was hard. But guess what? It was like the first time in my life, every one of those events was like saying to myself, I love you. I love you.
Oh,
like
yeah.
this is,
yeah.
and guess what? For then, that's like saying, I love you to your children, to your nieces and
mm-hmm.
nephews, to, you know, generations to come. That's the way to look at that.
Absolutely. I think that all the time when, you know, my kids are 13 and 10 now, and, you know, being able to model that kind of, you know, prioritizing self-care it's definitely something that I'm, now that, especially my daughter, now that she's older, she's starting to notice that more.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
you know, breaking that cycle of, and one of the points
exactly.
too that I was thinking of also about, you know, you can't overstress the importance of, you know, keeping yourself safe. And I think I've used this example on the show before, but when I was 90 days sober, I went to my 20 or 25th high school reunion. Because in my head, my argument was, I'm not going to let the fact that I'm an alcoholic keep me from doing
right,
things like this.
Right.
Like it was defiance and pride.
Yep.
And what I couldn't have known, because I was so new to the whole process, was that, you know, my alcoholism, my disease can sneak in the hardest to see ways. And
yeah.
when I'm in a situation where I start to feel other than, that's one of my biggest triggers. Like sometimes
that's
it's all around
point.
Alcohol. Like, look, all of those people can drink and I can't. I feel other than. I had some flashes of it this past Thanksgiving when I took my kids away to like a little, you know, kind of a little resort water park kind of place, and I could tell that my mental state was slipping because all of a sudden I was just surrounded by happy, healthy, intact families, and I wasn't. You know, when I started to hear that voice, it says, like, it was, I mean, it was almost kind of like a parody of itself, like, you know, here's a mom and a dad and the two kids and they're all together and I suck. Like, all of a sudden it was all about me.
Totally get it.
Like, that to me, it's like, and so, I mean, I have tools now. I can call people. I can, you know, I actually said to the kids at one point, I'm like, you know what? We need to go back up to the room for a little bit. I just need to lie down. I need to have a little rest. I'm tired. I had to remove myself from that until I could kind of get myself grounded again. And I called a friend and I talked to her about it. And we actually ended up having a laugh about it. But not putting myself in a situation where I feel other than, because that's how my disease talks to me.
Exactly. That's a great point.
So I might be able to prove to the world that I can go to my reunion and not drink, but what I underestimate is the lingering effect of feeling different.
And the lingering effect is what typically can get us. So
that's what will get me in the long run. And so, you know, when in doubt, stand down, protect yourself, cocoon yourself, get your bubble, you know, find the things that are just for you. And keep it small and keep it very, very simple. And one last thought that I had is, and this is something that I've practiced and I got some advice from other people, and I still do this all the time, is I think about kind of like one-liner things that I'll say that are just, that are different, that are, that'll stop me from falling back to old behaviors. Like if I feel myself about to blurt out, sure, I'll do that for you. I'll say I have things at the ready, like I need to check my schedule. Or, or I'll say before I go into an event, you know, I'll set the time limit myself. I have little, you know, we can stay an hour and then I have something else that I have to do. Like I try to build, or responses, even things like why aren't you drinking? I have those answers ready in my head. So it's just, and I practice them over and over again so they come more automatically, so that I can't just blurt out old responses or old behaviors. I mean, it's kind of like arming yourself with even things like, I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now. I think I said that so much in the earlier days, because I, you know, if I didn't say that, I was going to say something people pleasy or shape shifty, or I was going to do something that I didn't intend to do.
And we can't
plan enough, yeah, have things like that at the ready that are yours, that you're already comfortable with saying. And you know, that those are just very, very basic, simple tools that can end up being really important when things blindside
us,
as they always do.
100%.
Well, this has been awesome, Danielle. Thank you so much.
I always learn a lot
from the things that you have to share. And I just want to remind everybody that Danielle's website is it The Real You Revolution?
realyourevolution.com.
So
the word
awesome.
Real, the word you. And then Revolution.
Real,
thanks so much.
You and Revolution.
This is a great reminder for me as
I
well.
Know.
I know.
Now we have to go practice what we preach, right? There,
exactly.
There
exactly. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, and so to close the show tonight, like we always do, we'd like you to direct you to our website at thebubblehour.com. Also to shiningstrong.org, where you can find other resources surrounding recovery advocacy and support. And please send us your feedback or ideas for the show, or send us an email to thebubblehour@gmail.com. And we thank all of you for listening, and we wish you all a safe and happy holiday season. We'll be hearing from us between now and then. And Danielle, thank you so much for being on the show again tonight. We love having you on.
Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thanks, Danielle.
Bye,
bye-bye.
Ellie.